Well, hey, thanks for joining us on today's episode. I'm here with Mark.
Hello there.
And we're going to talk just a few more episodes about the question, why not return? Why not return? Today we're going to talk about like what we chase, how sin is able to offer fast tracks and shortcuts to what we're really chasing, or to the God who's chasing us, because we all chase something. Yeah. We all, you know, chase either like identity, the identity that we want or want others to see us as, or maybe success or the next achievement or approval of people, approval of my peers. Maybe we're chasing comfort or pleasure or security. I think we all have these things that we kind of wake up thinking about that carries this idea of I need this. I need to get my hands on this so I can be satisfied, so I can find satisfaction. Mm-hmm. We're all chasing something.
Yeah. Could be fame and fortune.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we wake up in the pursuit. We wake up in the pursuit. And so I want us to think about what we're pursuing, because all these desires are so powerful. At first glance, some of them don't seem wrong. Identity, joy, belonging, like comfort, security, pleasure, they are good things. But I think it's helpful to slow down and ask like the deeper question of like, what are you chasing, and what is the chase giving you? What are you getting from the pursuit, from the chase, from the daily grind for the thing?
Good question. Because we will ultimately ask that of ourselves. If we're in the pursuit of certain worldly goals, we will have to step back, maybe often, but maybe later in life when we've looked our lives over, and we'll ask ourselves, what did I get? What did I really receive from my pursuits? And oftentimes there's regret involved in that. And if we're honest, we'll wish that we had done things differently.
You tee up Solomon perfectly as you talk about that. Ecclesiastes is Solomon's experiment on the chase. He chases it all. Laughter, wine, incredible, famous projects, houses, vineyards, wealth, music, entertainment, everything our heart could fathom to pursue, he did. He held nothing back from himself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And you would think, here's a man who literally, really, when you read Ecclesiastes, you see that he gained all of his heart's wishes, every ambition, women, wealth, fame, power. It was all there. He got it all.
He had the fast track.
Yeah.
He had the shortcut.
Yeah. And of course, would you say he was happy with his life?
It does not read that way.
Yeah.
It does not read that way. At the end, he writes, it's a pretty like haunting conclusion. He says, everything is meaningless. That being able to get, you know, all of these pursuits just like in a moment's notice, he's able to do that. Things we pursue, you know, days on end to get money or success or fame, or like the grind, you know, like we grind for these kind of things. He's able to get them like in a moment's notice, and He doesn't just say, like, the pursuit is meaningless. He says everything. Like, life itself is meaningless. That's the conclusion he draws from these pursuits.
Yes.
Everything's meaningless. It's vanishing. It's like chasing after the wind. It's like how he famously says it. I got nothing.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Yeah. I remember him saying that all the wealth he had accumulated, it's going to be passed on to someone else. Mm. He's going to lose it. He's going to pass away,
mm-hmm.
and it's all going to be no longer profitable
yep.
for him.
Who knows what the next guy's going to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how wise the next person
yes.
is going to be? And so he looks back at life, and I think he's saying, during this time when I opened myself up to every whim of my heart, mm. I was wasting my time.
Mm.
There was more that I could have gotten,
mm-hmm.
that I could have gained than what I did. There was something bigger.
Yeah, I think it reads to me like it causes him to despair life itself.
Mm-hmm.
Pursuing these things and getting these things,
mm-hmm.
It drives him mad. Like he reads like it drives him mm-hmm. absolutely crazy. Everything becomes pointless.
Yeah, he has been so absorbed in things, possessions, dominance. Earthly accomplishments that in the end he could have lived a life of godliness and been probably more happy
mm-hmm.
than he had been during those days of self-centeredness.
Mm-hmm. I think he totally It makes me think of Joseph, and I think this is a good exercise for, like, what we think leads to the good life, because Joseph, when he rises to power, he goes through a lot. He goes through the ringer, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He goes through the ringer to get to this point. You know, his brothers betray him. They talk about killing him. They end up selling him into slavery. He gets accused by the guy who buys him as a slave. He gets accused by his wife of, like, trying to hook up with her. And then he's thrown in prison. And he helps somebody get out just with one condition. Just help me. When you get out, help me. He gets forgot about in prison. And so he's been through it. And I think we read when Pharaoh gets Joseph out of prison and makes him second in command over the most powerful empire the world had known up to that date. And he's given this nice robe. He's given a new name, a pagan name. He's married to the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On. I think we think, I've thought in the past, like, yeah, he's made it. You know, if this is a prime example of maintaining integrity, serving God, and he will bless you. He will reward you. Look at Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Joseph.
Yeah.
He has it all.
Yeah.
Joseph says the exact opposite. He calls this the land of his affliction, the land of his suffering, that if he's not close to the presence of God and God's people, God's family, all this wealth, all of this status, people bow the knee when he approaches,
mm-hmm.
All of this fame, all of this, you know, being held in high regard as Pharaoh's right-hand man. If you're away from the presence of God and his people, you actually don't have anything. You're in a land of affliction. You're in a land of suffering. This isn't Joseph saying, I made it.
Yeah.
This is Joseph saying, I'm still going through the ringer.
Mm-hmm.
all of this wealth isn't worth comparing to the wealth that God has for his people, the wealth of being in his presence.
Yeah, Joseph, he seems like he has everything, the power and the wealth and the control, the honor, second only to the king of the greatest empire on earth. But he still is surrounded by godlessness, people who believe in magic and superstition and gods that aren't real. So it has to be difficult for him because he has to keep his faith in God in the midst of all the paganism that's around him. But he continues to live. God has blessed him, and it seems to me like he understands that he may have a purpose in life. So the Bible doesn't say too much about his if he had dissatisfaction or not, except that he does call it the land of his affliction.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you a real clue about his true feelings about being in that land, even though he's a king.
I mean, God has a purpose for him.
Mm-hmm.
God has a divine purpose for all of our lives.
Yes.
Yeah, it never really comes out and says, like, he was unhappy, other than him calling it the land of affliction, the land of his suffering. But I think he is like the OG Daniel. He is like the original Daniel of somebody who's not in the ideal place with the ideal people, but he's going to make the most of it. He's going to serve God, and he's going to be a blessing to all those around him as he represents the God of the Hebrew people, and gives his kids later on, he gives his kids Hebrew names to be walking around Egypt with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is who I identify with.
Yeah, Joseph's kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you're not saying that a person can't achieve in this life and prosper, but what you're saying is that we always need to put God's purpose above all else, because that is God and we belong to him. Mm. And without him, we would have nothing.
Mm.
He's our source.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with having or being given, you know? If that's the purpose God has for you in your life, for you to get to a place like this, then I should be nothing but happy for you. My question would be, what do you think Joseph was waking up thinking about? I don't think he was waking up thinking about how to get more money or more power. Mm-hmm. Or I think Joseph was waking up thinking, how can I be more faithful?
Mm-hmm.
If this is where it's at, if this were all the wealth, all the honor, all the glory is at, is like in God's presence, how can I be more faithful to that? And God's plan for Joseph was him to rise to this position of power in Egypt. And for some of our lives, that might be God's plan and purpose for us. But I think what makes it successful, what makes Joseph successful, he's called that over and over, is I think he's waking up thinking, how can I be more faithful to the God of my people, to the creator of heaven and earth?
Yes, I see Joseph daily being like Daniel in prayer.
Yes.
In praying, God, lead me closer to you. Lead me in your way. I trust in you. And that's what probably keeps him going, I would say.
And I think that having that mentality would have kept Solomon from concluding, everything is so pointless. Mm-hmm. Everything is so meaningless. Mm-hmm. Because it gives so much meaning to your life when you wake up and your pursuit is drawing closer to God.
Yes.
Growing in faith to God.
And Solomon actually in the last chapter of Ecclesiastes says, this is the conclusion of it all.
Everything's been heard.
Yes.
I've laid everything out.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
This is the end of the matter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
obey God, keep his commandments, uh-huh. for this is the whole purpose of man. So I have to think, unless Solomon is being a teacher in Ecclesiastes and is showing us the way that what the things that would happen to us if we only had a worldly perspective, mm-hmm. and then telling us the end of it all, that it's godliness that counts.
There is an alternate. There is an alternate path. Mm-hmm.
If unless that was his purpose, mm-hmm. it just seems like he dedicated himself to these worldly pursuits mm-hmm. at certain times in his life, and just inundated his thoughts and his heart and his purpose in building and gaining and changing things around him to serve himself. But then he sees the futility of it all,
mm-hmm.
and in his wisdom learns this lesson and teaches it to others, which is pretty, I don't know, it's kind of humble to admit all of your mistakes.
Yes. Yeah, if you haven't read through Ecclesiastes in a while, because we have recently, if you haven't read through it in a while, I highly recommend it. It'll leave you thinking for days, if not weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Such a good read. Such a good read. You know, sin does know, like, what we want most. God does know, like, what we really want out of life. Sin knows that we're longing for love, that we're after joy,
yes.
that we have this deep desire for belonging and for peace. And it doesn't try to, like, take those desires away. It doesn't try to erase those desires from your heart. What it does is it twists them and offers you these shortcuts, these fast tracks to fulfillment, to the good life. That's what Solomon was getting sidetracked with, was the shortcuts, mm-hmm. the fast track mm-hmm. to fulfillment, to life that has so much meaning and purpose.
Sometimes, sometimes in the United States, the fast track can be, or can seem to be, successful. And you luck out and you find a way, a course, and you get a good job and you get promotion, and you just give yourself to that way of living. But oftentimes, we're able to look at our endeavors and our struggles, and we're able to say, what really came of that? You know, how much good came of that? And what did I do during that process? Did I hurt people? Did I step on people? Sometimes our ambitions are so self-centered that we're totally unconcerned about other people. And we can insult. We can put down people. We can look down on people. And it just, when we look back on that, especially later in life, we see some things that we're not proud of, we're really regretful about. We wish we had handled things differently. But anyway, everyone has their own life to live. I think maybe when I have been forced to look back on failures or harm or hurt that I received, I think that was like Joseph, who got sold into slavery and almost killed by his brothers. It's kind of God's purpose, God's sovereignty and work in my life, that I took these avenues that were not godly. And later I was able to see that they weren't godly and weren't very purposeful and weren't very kind or wise. And it changed me when I was able to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't have to look far to see like our cultural obsession with the fast track and the shortcut. And sin knows that we, you know, had that inclination towards getting it and getting it now. And it totally leverages that against us. Yeah. And
you talked about once about like ordering pills in order to lose weight.
Yes.
You know,
or 10-minute ad programs.
So the world is, see, the marketing of those pills makes it look like the best thing you could ever do. I mean, you are, it's promoted, and then you kind of say, well, wow, that looks great. So you buy it. Whether or not it lives up to expectations, you know. And so the world is pushing you into that fast track because it's kind of the way of our economic system to sell and promote and to tell people they need what I have to give you.
Yeah. Yeah, and it leaves you wanting. At the end of, you know, trying all the 10-week programs and all the miracle pills, you spend your life trying all these shortcuts, trying all these fast tracks, when you could have dedicated those years to, like, the real thing. The real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the real thing might be getting a good night's sleep, waking up early, and walking in the sunshine, breathing fresh air, and just living a longer life because I've worked harder to be healthy. You know, instead of doing the quick and easy thing.
Yeah. One of them really changes who you are. The fast track, the shortcut, it doesn't change who you are.
That's true.
But going through the long process of, like, becoming someone who eats better or, you know, takes more, puts more care into, like, my health and my mindfulness and, like, that changes a person. The fast track, the 10-minute program, it doesn't. It doesn't really change people. Yeah, it's
that really relates though to life in general.
Yeah,
the way you brought that up, it's kind of a microcosm of our whole life, our whole lives, our choices.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the chase, it comes to a crossroads. You know, are we gonna start going after the real thing? Like, where real joy and comfort and peace and wealth and, you know, honor, like, where those things really come from? Who is the originator of those things? Or are we going to keep trying the shortcut, the fast track? Are we going to be distracted because, you know, we're not pursuing God, the possessor of the real thing? We're waking up pursuing, you know, the whatever the day.
God doesn't seem like the easy way, but actually Jesus says that your burdens will be lighter if you come to me.
I think it's probably harder to pursue God, and to pursue, like, to chase after faithfulness, growing in faithfulness every day. I think it is harder, and I think it's because it's the real thing. It's really mm-hmm. changing you.
Yeah.
The same way, like, pursuing abs through the 10-week program, you know, like, it doesn't really change you. It's not the real thing. It's going to leave you at the end of 10 weeks thinking, now what? What's the next program? What's the next plan? What's the newest pill? Instead of like going through the process, the harder, the longer process that is the real thing.
Mm. Yeah. I would think the hardest part would be in the very beginning when you are trying to motivate yourself to experience the source, the true source of all existence. I would think that the argument in your head would try to make you put that off or delay it or say, I don't know, do I really want to do something so totally different?
Mm-hmm.
But then after you learn, after you take the step and you put your toe in the water a few times by attending, and then you learn a little bit, you meet some people, and you get involved, and then you say, I want to be Christ's, because it really isn't hard to be Christ's, but the heart has to be willing.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to go in and seek it, be seeking before you find the truth of how great it is.
Yeah, it is. Sometimes our spirit is willing, but our flesh is weak.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate you bringing some emphasis to that, like giving it a chance. It probably is going to feel hard if it's not something that you've adapted to or like, you know, has kind of become who you are. And like the need to like to really give God a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, it just has me thinking in all these different like exercise ways, which are goofy, but how hard it is to like make a real change. whenever you have the realization like something's not working, I don't feel good, I don't have any energy, I'm not able to sleep, I need to make some changes, and like how hard those first weeks are.
Yes.
You know, it's so hard to stick to. It's because it's the real thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this applies too to someone who has tried it, has wanted it, but has walked away and is thinking, I really need to get back to the true way.
Mm.
But sometimes there are going to be obstacles thrown at them too, as far as not making that choice. So, you know, there are, you have to find motivation. You have to see that you really need the change, that the change is going to be life-changing and good for you. And then be willing to take a small step. And most places like our church, we just kind of shake your hand, say, welcome, come on in, come back, you know. And there's no difficulty involved in coming in and sitting down and participating a little bit with our service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Community is so helpful at helping us stick to, you know, whether it's in the context of a gym buddy or in the context of a church family.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier to adhere to the changes that you want to make if you have a community and if you have support from people who want the best for you.
Mm-hmm.
So important.
Yes.
You know, small changes, reading, opening the scripture, praying to God, maybe just thinking about some of these things later, like if it's not something you normally do. All good changes, but there's something to be said for doing it with a friend or a family member
mm-hmm.
or someone that you know wants the best for you.
Yeah. Because we know, we see that we need to change. We need to make a new person out of ourselves. And that can be done. That can be done by seeking it out and taking step and then another step and then a few more steps. And then connecting and building. And so I would encourage people to make a change, produce a new you, a you that your future self will thank.
Mm.
So I just encourage people to follow the Bible, follow the Lord, because He wants what's best for your life. And He'll give it to you.
Absolutely.